Hello, friends, and welcome to Out of This World Radio. It's so good to hear of you on board today. We're broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle in the United States. And your host today is Ted Marr. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and to make this planet a far better and much happier place. And I know with everyone's help, we'll be able to do this. We are the fastest-growing spiritual and psychic and UFO radio program in the world, with listeners in over 60 countries. And I've also been told we have a lot of listeners off-planet as well. So whether you're here on the Earth or off-planet, welcome to the show. Today's show will be really out of this world. For the first hour, from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Seattle time, we will be interviewing Courtney Brown, who runs a center devoted to remote viewing. He's been on this radio program before, and he's on today's show to discuss his newest video, Aliens on Iapetus, a moon far out in the solar in the solar system. During the second hour, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., we'll be interviewing Mr. Sirocho Yoshinuchi. I hope I pronounced that correctly, or Yoshi. I think I'll just call him Yoshi. That's easier for me to pronounce. One of the Dr. Masuro's top disciplines. Yoshi is one of the top authorities in the use of a Dr. Emoto's Hado machine, which determines with near 100% accuracy the karmic and vibrational solutions from almost any disease. He was actually interviewed on this radio show last month, but so many people liked his presentation and they had so many questions that I invited him to come back on today's show and go over his work. For those interested, the Hado machines cost $5,500 and can be ordered through Out of This World Radio. If interested, please contact me at my email at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com or at 509-750-9793 here in the United States. Before we begin, I'd like to thank the many wonderful sponsors of this show, including the Inspired Crystal Shop at 765 Broadway in Tacoma. It's a wonderful place to visit. Brady's Oysters in Westport, Washington, and the Tokeland Hotel in Tokeland, Washington. I'd also like to give a special note of thanks to one of my wonderful supporters, a gentleman named Orion. He's a wonderful computer programmer down in the Bend, Oregon area. Highly recommend, if you've got any computer problems at all, to send Orion a note. His website for more information is www.oriontechworks. That's oriontechworks.com. He's a great guy, and I've been very happy with his services. With that, I'd like to play a promotion for my friends at Brady's Oysters in Westport, Washington, and then we'll come right back and we'll get going with the program today. Hello, friends. I'd love to tell you about a wonderful seafood place on the Washington coast. It's called Brady's Oysters. They're located on Highway 105, about 15 miles west of Aberdeen, Washington, in Westport. If you ever go out to the coast and you'd love some seafood, please stop by Brady's Oysters. They have wonderful seafood, including crabs, oysters, clams, salmon, halibut, steelhead, you name it. They've got it. And their prices are extremely reasonable. Their phone number, if you want to give them a call, is 360-268-0077. I've been there myself, and their seafood is great.
For the people, by the people. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Hello, friends. Well, we're back on the air again, and Out of This World Radio is supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. Even a dollar will really help, and I just want to thank everyone for their donations and support. I wanted to tell just a few things going on here in the Seattle area this summer and also tonight, actually. Tonight, I'm sponsoring what I call a spiritual film festival showing Inori, or How Prayer Unites the World. It's with such famous spiritualists as Deepak Chopra, Bruce Lipton, Murakami Kazu, and Lin McTaggart. Produced by Japanese film director Tetsu Shinotori, the film has never been seen in the United States before, and so tonight's showing is a North American premiere for both the United States and Canada. The showing will be at the Baha'i Center. The address is 16007 Northeast 8th Street. If you need directions, please call the Baha'i Center at area code 425-957-1919. And the reason I did this is because I was in Tokyo last month, and I visited with people from the wonderful Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, and they regularly send what they call angel water to the children of Fukushima. Now, this ancient water was discovered by a Russian scientist named Dr. Smirnov in Russia back at the time of the Chernobyl nuclear accident back in 1986. And this water actually has the capability, it actually either reverses cancer or prevents cancer in children. So it's an amazing product. It does work. And so without any government support, they rely totally on private donations. The Moto Peace Project in Tokyo sends this water regularly to the children of Fukushima so they don't get cancer. I can't think of a better project to support. So when I was in Tokyo last month, I told them I'd help them out any way I can. And so tonight's is a fundraiser for that effort, with the proceeds going directly to the Moto Peace Project, which will go directly to distributing and marketing this angel water in Fukushima for these kids. And I can't think of a better use of my time. So I'm doing this tonight, and your support would be really appreciated. Tickets are just $25, and if you'd like to come, that'd be wonderful. If you can't come, a donation to them would be wonderful. You can pay by PayPal or just send me a check. The address to send it to is 1347 Deerbrush Drive Southeast, Olympia, Washington, 98513 here in the United States. A couple more things going on. This weekend, there's what's called a Fairy and Human Relations Congress in Twisp, Washington. This is a wonderful event in the Cascade Mountains in eastern Washington. For tickets and information, please visit their website at www.fairycongress.com. I will be attending the conference tomorrow and Sunday and be giving psychic readings both days. I've been a psychic for over 20 years, and my accuracy rate for readings is between 90 and 100%. Next month, during July 17th and 18th, we will be having, I'm sponsoring a workshop with a famous psychic from Japan named Ray Chandran. For those in Japan, I'm sure you know about him. For those outside of Japan, Mr. Chandran does travel the world. He is, in my opinion, one of the best psychics in Japan. And he'll be giving a two-day workshop on soul healing and sound healing. The event will be held at the Interfaith a Christian Church over in Ballard. The details for this information, for more information, just go to my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And there's a little tab in the upper right-hand corner that says Summer 2015 Events, and just check on that. The other things going on is on July 19th, we'll be having a water ceremony with Professor Jerry Pollack of the University of Washington. For those who are in Seattle, you may not realize this, but Professor Pollack is famous. He's probably the world's most famous water scientist, and he'll be doing a water ceremony on the 19th. For more information, please visit our website, again, at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And the reason why he's doing the water ceremony on the 19th is because there's going to be a simultaneous water ceremony in Tokyo the next day, also with the same theme. So we're doing the same thing here in Seattle and also in Tokyo. On July 25th, I'll be attending the Boeing Employees Parapsychology Fair in Kent Commons in Kent, Washington. It's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Another wonderful event. I can't say enough good things about the Boeing Employees Parapsychology Fair. The address will be at 525 4th Avenue in Kent, and I'll be also be giving readings there. Then on August 8th and 9th, there's an Ocean Shores Body and Soul Festival in Ocean Shores, Washington. I'll be out there as well, giving psychic readings. And finally, from August 19th to the 23rd, there's a Mount Shasta UFO and Spiritual Conference with a whole bunch of fascinating people, including Anna Onnick from Venus, Rob Potter, Anya Schaefer from Germany, Alex Collier, a contactee from the Andromeda Galaxies, James Gillian from our own Washington State here, who's a UFO contactee, Scott Lemriel, who's been a Galactic Alliance contactee for the past 54 years, myself, and Greg Campobasso. Now, for those who don't know Craig Campobasso, he is the director of the award-winning film A Stranger at the Pentagon, a true story about how an angelically created being named Valiant Thor actually came here to this planet and stayed at the Pentagon from 1957 to 1960. And when he was here, he offered technologies and spiritual advancement to President Eisenhower for this planet to get completely rid of disease and completely rid of poverty. From what I'm told by Craig, the film producer, Eisenhower was in favor of it, but Vice President Nixon and the Joint Chiefs of Staff were against it because they didn't get any weapons out of it. And apparently, from what I found out, Vice President Nixon at that time had a lot of people in the medical profession, and the pharmaceutical industries, and he was afraid that they'd all lose their jobs if disease was completely eliminated on the planet. Such a terrible thing to think about, huh? They'd lose their jobs in exchange for getting rid of all the disease. Well, anyway, those were choices made back then. But we'll be going into, during the next hour, I want you to stay tuned from 3 to 4 p.m. Seattle time, because I have an interview with a gentleman who has Hauto vibrational machines. And the success rate of these machines for curing almost any illness is near 100%. So that should be an very interesting interview. Before we begin, I'd like to thank the many wonderful sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol's been designing my website and providing wonderful support. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College, who helped me start my program. My dear friend Michiko Hayashi and all their wonderful staff, including Hiro Emoto, Yasu Nimoto, and their wonderful people there in the office of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan. They do wonderful work to raise the spiritual vibration of this planet. And if you'd like to donate to their effort, I know donations would be really appreciated. Their website, I believe, is emotopeaceproject.net, or you can simply contact me at Ted Mara here at the station at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to put you in touch with them. I'd also like to thank my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show, my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer, Eric Ryder, and my station manager, Eric Crema, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. You can always listen to the show live from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Seattle time at www.1150kknw.com. And after the show, you can always listen to the show in our archives at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And now let's go on to our first guest, Courtney Brown. Courtney, are you there?
I am here, and I want to thank you for inviting me on.
Well, Courtney, you're an interesting fellow. I have a bit of biography here, but it's 30 pages long, and if I read it, then we won't be able to ask any questions. So how did you – tell us a little bit about your background, Courtney.
Sure. Well, I'm a college professor, but I don't do any of the work that I do with remote viewing at my university. I do that all at the Farsight Institute, and that's www.farsight, FARSIGHT.org, like seeing far, Farsight. And it's a nonprofit, and what we do is we do research into a phenomenon known as remote viewing, which uses procedures that were developed by the United States military and used for espionage purposes. It's a mental procedure. Some people would call it a psychic, but it's very highly structured. Its reliability rate is really high, and the research we do is on either people who use those procedures or procedures methodologies that are derivative of those procedures. So remote viewing was originally a military phenomenon, but now it's totally civilian, and we're a civilian organization. We're the leading venue for the publication of full-blown scientific studies using remote viewing, using the absolute best remote viewers on the planet right now, and under totally squeaky clean scientific conditions with verification of the data, everything. I mean, it's really remarkable with the stuff we've done. Often we do projects involving scientific investigations into the nature of the remote viewing phenomenon itself, or other times we do projects that are exploratory in nature, and the one that we're talking about today is on the exploratory side, where the remote viewers were tasked to see under totally blind conditions, meaning they're never told anything about the nature of the project or the targets or anything, just given a non-leading email saying there is a target, remote view it, and send in the data. In this case, it was what appears to be a set of structures, buildings on the wall of a crater in Iapetus, and that's a moon of Saturn, and it was taken by the Cassini space probe that was sent up by NASA. The pictures are very clear. There's clearly some type of artificial structures on the wall of the crater, and then some steps or things that look like steps that come out from the side of it and have a right angle to them as well. I don't think they are steps because they're too big, but clearly they're designed like steps would be designed. What they were originally, we have ideas about, but the point is it's totally an artificial type of thing. And so with the picture looking so anomalous, I had promised myself at one point, you know, years and years ago, that if I ever get a chance to send the best remote viewers on the planet to that spot to take a look at whatever that is, I would do it. And that opportunity came. And the remote viewers that we use are, that participate in this particular project, are Dick Allgaier in Hawaii, who uses the Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild procedures, and Daz Smith, who uses the, in Britain, who uses the CRV, or Controlled Remote Viewing procedures. The Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild procedures were taught to Dick Allgaier by Glenn Wheaton, who came out of Special Forces Intelligence and participated in what was essentially a movement within the military that later became known as the 1st Earth Battalion and was featured in the movie Men Who Stare at Goats, starring George Clooney and Jeff Bridges. And Daz Smith, using the CRV, or Controlled Remote Viewing methodology, those methodologies came out of the DIA, or the Defense Intelligence Agency, and have been long taught by people like Lynn Buchanan, who also came out of Defense Intelligence Agency. Anyway, so that's in a nutshell for what it is. Remote viewing is a mental procedure. Some would call it psychic, but we don't, because the nature of the methodologies are very different from what is normally done with natural psychics. They're very highly structured with an extreme level of control in terms of front-loading, meaning there is no front-loading at all. The remote viewers are never told anything about what they're supposed to be perceiving, and they follow a strict set of things to do, the procedures themselves, and that's quite standardized so that we can compare these things across viewers and so on. Anyway, the remote viewers that we work with are what some call scary good, and they have a huge publicly available track record that can be seen at our website, farsight.org, as well as some peer-reviewed publications in some mainstream outlets.
Pardon me for interrupting, Courtney, but I just wanted to say to my many listeners around the world that I had Courtney on more than a month ago, and I so enjoyed having you on, Courtney, that I just had to have you back. At that time, we talked about your work, your remote viewers, remote viewing, what really happened at 9/11, and also a civilization on Mars, which I thought was just fascinating. And but I just wanted to note that. And for those who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here on 1150 AM in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. We have a fascinating gentleman on today named Courtney Brown. He works with remote viewers as part of his nonprofit Farsight Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. And please continue, Courtney. I just wanted to make that statement.
Sure. Well, yeah, when we talked before, we had focused on some of the recent projects that we've did, and 9/11 is one of them, the 9/11 events, and that
right.
was fascinating.
Right.
But we also talked about the so-called face on Mars.
Right.
In the Cydonia region.
Fascinating.
And today we're talking about Iapetus. Now, the face on Mars in the Cydonia region of Mars and the facilities that are on the moon Iapetus of Saturn are actually parts one and two of a three-part series where we deal with aliens, remote viewing aliens, extraterrestrials. And that has not been done at the Farsight Institute for a long time, for well over a decade. We stay away from extraterrestrial applications or investigations with remote viewing, largely because the remote viewers themselves, who are a bit prima donna-ish in the sense that they really are very good and they like what they do to be appreciated and understood for what it is without the extra woo-woo factor of extraterrestrial content. But I don't have any such limitations, and so eventually, and they have to do it all blind, so they don't know what they're getting. So eventually I just said, oh, to heck with this, and I assigned that project, But realizing that they might quit on me if I did it twice, I put three targets into one project. Mm-hmm. So I get my money's worth out of this one project. So
we
had the Cydonia region of Mars and then the alien facilities on Iapetus, which we found out are alien facilities.
Right.
And then the next one is coming out in only 3 weeks.
Wow.
And that's the famous Phoenix Lights experiment. Now, the video is almost done on that.
Now, I'll have to, pardon me interrupting, Courtney, I'll have to have you back.
Yeah, the Phoenix Lights thing is to die for. It's really a very interesting thing. Huh. But the other ones are amazing in their own way, just as much as amazing. But the video for the Phoenix Lights one is almost done, and we're fine-tuning it, tweaking it, and we're starting to release pieces of it. And just today, for example, there was released a short clip from that video with part of a remote viewing session by Daz Smith. And you can see that on our website. If you go to farsight.org, we have on the nav bar links to our YouTube channel. We have two YouTube channels, actually. One is for our serious scientific stuff, and the other is for edgy, artsy, avant-garde, experimental type stuff. Cool and Sexy is the second one. That's how we like to call it. And we have a music video that was released today, actually called Meditate Every Day, and it was done by my son, Abel. And so actually that's out today, and that would be very interesting to your particular listenership. But also the clip from the Iapetus thing is found in our weekly newsletter, and you can actually find it right on our homepage. You don't have to go to our YouTube thing. It's on the bottom of our homepage. It's just, you can just watch it right there. And it's called The Farsight Scene, and that's a weekly video blast. And what we do is we tell people what we've done, and on that video blast, the one of today, the music video that we just released today is there, but also the clip from Daz Smith from the Phoenix Lights project is on there as well. So if you go to our website, farsight.org, and just go to the bottom of the homepage, you'll see that Farsight Scene video blast. And it's only like 8 minutes long, but it has a lot of stuff in it.
Well,
anyway, that's that. But the Iapetus project is one of the most unusual things that we've ever done, that I've ever seen in the UFO extraterrestrial type of exploration type genre. We've never seen anything like this, and it comes so nicely packaged with such a clear picture from the Cassini space probe, so you can see it and you can look at it and you say, wow.
Well, the thing
what's that?
Yeah, what's that? Well, pardon me for interrupting, Courtney, but what I realized when I was looking at that picture of this structure on Iapetus is that it's like there's a series of lines, and it's trying to remember now. It's kind of sort of triangular shaped, maybe not. And then it's got a series of dark lines in it, and it stands.
Yeah, those are windows. Those are gallery windows.
Gallery windows, right? And then you've got a picture of what it should look like from somebody there, in that this beautiful serene picture of a dry, very dry lake bed looking over the looking over Saturn. And I thought to myself, it must have been a very fabulous place when it was in use and whoever was there.
Yeah, that facility is, we found out, we know the whole story of it, and the full results on the video, Aliens on Iapetus, is out now. And when we do our remote viewing, in the old days, military days, they used to do it all on paper and pen. Mm-hmm. And that was like watching the grass grow. It was incredibly boring to watch. But now we do everything on video live, and so our remote viewers are trained to do their sessions by themselves, solo, on camera, which they have to set up themselves, plus audio and everything. And we have really good cameras. And on standing up in front of a whiteboard. So it's very interactive, and absolutely everybody who sees this stuff is like on the edge of their seat, because the audience knows what they're supposed to be remote viewing, but it's clear that the remote viewers do not know, yet they're describing things in such incredible detail. It's a jaw-dropper when you see it. and all the nuances come out that couldn't be done with paper and pen.
Sure, sure, absolutely, Courtney. I was wondering if you could give out your website, please, so people could, after the show, look at the video.
Sure. Again, it's www.farsight, F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T, like seeing far, .org, O-R-G, because okay. we're a nonprofit.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, one thing just real quick before I forget. Who was there? I mean, the video goes into great detail about this resort facility, and it was a very beautiful place. But did they see actually, were they humans who were there?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting.
The people that were there were just like us. They looked like us. They talked like us. They acted like us.
Wow.
This was not a military base. It was not a spy outpost.
Okay.
It was not a mining facility. It was not an industrial facility. This was like a resort, spa, hotel that somebody who was way richer than Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, or Richard Branson built. Mm-hmm. And back a long, long, long time ago. And what's so interesting is that what do wealthy people do with their money? For example, what did Marlon Brando do with some of his money? Mm. He bought an island. I don't think he ever went to that island, but he bought himself an island.
Mm-hmm.
So people who have a lot of money, they're no longer thinking like you and I about budgets for kitchens, you know, mm-hmm. for a food budget and rent.
Sure.
Do we have enough money
sure.
for the rent today? I mean,
sure.
they don't think along those lines. They don't really think in terms of financial limitations any longer.
Mm-hmm.
They think in terms of, well, what am I going to do with all of this? And this guy thought that he would be building this. Think of it as a Zen spiritual retreat, monastery type retreat on steroids.
My God.
Just like, wow. It's just, he bought this, like, he built this like facility on what is arguably the most beautiful spot in the solar system, perhaps
wow.
many solar systems, because wow. many of the moons of Saturn are on the same plane as the rings of Saturn, so you don't see the rings.
Mm-hmm.
But Iapetus is off the plane. So when you look up, you see an unfettered star field, but you also see the rings of Saturn right above you, plus
beautiful.
Saturn itself.
Beautiful.
And plus they get the stark moon itself with all of the craters and everything. I can't imagine a more beautiful spiritual type location anywhere. It would just be so inspiring. And
sure,
so
sure.
this place was built by this guy. He was a male person.
Mm-hmm.
This guy who had unlimited wealth as far as we're concerned. And of course the means of transportation, they were not using chemical rockets. They were using the type of transportation that you see with UFOs today. So they could get there very quickly, and they built this resort spa. And people went there to commune with nature, to get closer to all that is, God,
wow.
whatever.
Wow, amazing.
They had hotel staff there as well.
Wow.
Who were just like normal hotel staff here.
Were they, you say they were humans. Were they from Atlantis? Were they from this planet or another planet?
Well, at this point, I have to leave the remote viewing data and actually connect dots between different remote viewing projects.
Okay.
Our remote viewing projects with Cydonia Mars, but also with it's called the Exploding Planet Project, which is the origins of the asteroid belt.
Right. Uh-huh.
All point to the idea that there was a war in this solar system long, long ago.
All right.
Oh. And the war, it apparently involved a planet that was where the asteroid belt is today.
Sure.
And the asteroid belt is the remains of that planet.
Uh-huh.
Now, that planet, we can call it Maldek for lack of a better word for it.
Uh-huh.
But that planet was apparently very close to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been theorized that Mars was a moon of that planet.
Hmm.
And the idea that the asteroid belt was a product of an exploding planet,
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
was, a great deal of planetary data was collected that support that hypothesis by mm-hmm. Thomas Van Flandern, who was a very mainstream astronomer who was head of his Department of Celestial Mechanics at the Naval Observatory. The mainstream idea is that the primordial solar nebula is the cause of the asteroid belt, that the asteroid belt is simply junk that was left over from when the solar system was originally formed. But there's not a shred of evidence that supports that.
Right.
And to give you some obvious biggies, the asteroids are big rocks. Mm-hmm. For example, Ceres asteroid. I mean, they're huge, and they're rocks. They're mm-hmm. hard.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get rocks from the primordial solar nebula. The
right.
primordial solar nebula is dust, and
right.
dust doesn't collapse by itself into a hard rock.
Right.
You need a gravity source to pull in all the dust until you eventually have a planet. And then with the gravity sufficiently big, strong, it compresses the dust to the point where you have a rock.
Sure.
That's how you get a rock. You mm-hmm. can't get a rock from a pile of dust.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have all these asteroid rocks, obviously they were part of a planet at some point. And secondly, the asteroids themselves show very clear evidence of having been exposed to an extreme heat source. There's glazing on the surface, melting. So it's very clear that something happened to create the asteroids. Now, the fact that mainstream science hasn't yet dealt with that is understandable, because the idea of a war in the solar system, the idea of a planet that exploded, you know, that's very out of the box. A lot of people just don't want to think along those lines, despite the fact that the planetary data are very clear on this regard. So they...
You can think that on my program, because the title of my program, of course, is called Out of This World. And
yeah,
we're not a traditional radio program, so feel free to explore where you want.
But I do like to make the connections of these ideas, which do seem out of the box,
mm-hmm.
and ideas that are taught in the university systems as mainstream, why those ideas are different. So mm-hmm. I don't just like to dismiss them. I like to explain, you know, that there's a sort of a psychic shock mm-hmm. that mainstream scientists have to go through when they realize all of these other things. So not only are we talking about extraterrestrial life, but we're talking about the fact that some of them got into big arguments and fought.
Right.
Anyway, the facility on Iapetus was the place to go to in the early days by the richest of the richest, the elite of the elite, in terms of having a spiritual type of retreat. Again, think of a Zen monastery retreat on steroids.
Sure.
But it did not end well. What happened was the war happened. And when the war happened, the ships stopped flying.
Oh, okay.
So what happened was, on Iapetus, it's a barren, icy moon with meteor junk all over the place. Nothing grows. You don't grow any food on it. There's no air.
Right.
So everything has to be brought in.
Well,
they may have been able to get some water from the ice, but otherwise you're talking about bringing in air, food, water, everything. And when the war happened, especially with the planet exploding, that stopped the supply ships.
And interesting.
What I do know is that some people might have been able to get off of this facility in the ships that were there.
Sure.
But the question remains, where could they go?
Right.
Meaning, if, you know, for a long time, even if Mars was not destroyed, it was seriously damaged. For example, one half of Mars is totally covered with deep craters,
mm-hmm.
because that was the side that was facing the planet that exploded.
Sure.
The other side of Mars is without any craters.
Mm-hmm.
So you have craters on only one half of Mars and no craters on the other.
Yeah.
Also, the cratered side is between 1 to 3 kilometers thicker mm-hmm. than the uncratered side.
Hmm.
So whatever exploded hit Mars like a shotgun blast and layered that side of Mars with a lot of stuff. Now, we know that did not end life on Mars.
Right.
Because there is very solid evidence now that there was a nuclear explosion on the surface of Mars considerably after that. So life found a way, like Jeff Goldblum on Jurassic Park, life finds a way. So, you know, life built itself back, and eventually there was a nuclear explosion. You can read about the nuclear forensics for involved with that documentation by a book that's recently been published by John Brandenburg, mm-hmm. Called Death on Mars. And he's a mainstream physicist who used to work at the Scandia Labs. And the radioactive isotope evidence on Mars is absolutely unambiguous, that there was a nuclear explosion. But it was on the surface. And when that happened, mm-hmm. that's when Mars became unlivable, because that's what blew the atmosphere finally away from the surface.
Could you tell my listeners perhaps what the time frame is? Was it like, for example, 1 million years ago or 500,000?
That is actually best done not with remote viewing, but it's actually best done with standard traditional scientific methods. Mm-hmm. Once you connect the dots and have the remote viewing is useful. It's useful for filling in the entire backstory.
Sure.
So, but in terms of actual dating, the best source to go to for that would be Thomas Van Flandern's work. Mm-hmm. He has a major book on that, on the subject of these planetary stuff. And what he does is he notes that some of the comets that are coming into the solar system, they have ice on them, of course, and they were ejected from the solar system by the planet that exploded. Mm-hmm. And so some of those comets are coming back in for the very first time. And so by looking at their orbits, the period of their orbits, how long it takes to go for them to go one complete circle, and they're coming back in for the first time, they have ways of dating when the planet exploded. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's it. But we're talking what appears to be tens of millions of years. We're not talking hundreds of millions or billions of years. So in terms of the age of the solar system, we're talking relatively recent experiences. So we're talking some millions of years, not many millions of years, mm-hmm. in the past. And so the real question is when this war happened,
right?
Some people might have been able to get off on ships, but the real question is, where do you go? Even if Mars wasn't completely destroyed, it was not a place to go to for a long time. I don't know how long it would have taken them, but it would have taken them a long time to recover to the point where they had nuclear weapons again. So Mars was not, you could just land on Mars at that point. That's what, in fact, ended the Cydonia region. It was the flooding that occurred when everything hit Mars. There was huge tidal wave flooding, and that inundated the subway system, and that's what ended Cydonia as a city. And so when we're talking about, the war, even if you had a ship back in those days to get off of Iapetus, the real question is, where do you go? But we do know that the remote viewing data is very clear on this. You have to actually see it to understand how clear and how good these people, these remote viewers, really are. And how the work is as good, or actually much better, than if they were there with their own physical eyes. I say better because they can move backward and forward in time.
Fascinating.
To when it was fully operational, the facility, and so on. But let us say that either because they ran out of ships, because some people left with ships, but there weren't enough ships for everybody to get on.
Right.
Or because they had no place to go. They had ships, but nowhere to go.
Well,
for whatever reason, a bunch of people were left in the facility and died in the facility.
Wow.
So this is the archaeologist's dream dig, meaning eventually we will be able to go to the facility and look and see. Now, if we can get in without blowing a hole in the wall, meaning if we can figure out how to open the door, mm-hmm. then we may find air still in there. We probably would find the dead bodies. If the dead bodies are totally decomposed, they may not be mummified, they may be dust, but you'd still find all the organics. And apparently the power source, or one of the power sources that was used, is in power down mode. So it's apparently still operating, meaning there's still some power coming out of it.
Isn't that amazing?
So it's possible that we could actually go into the facility and flick some switches and actually turn it back on. I'm not sure what we would do with it. It was not like a scientific base or a military base that might have an interest with people who are searching for advanced extraterrestrial technology. I'm sure there is some extraterrestrial technology there, but it was a hotel type resort.
Wow.
So I'm not sure what we would do with it once we got there. It would, but it would nonetheless be very interesting from an archaeological historical perspective. And there might be some ships there that would be interesting to sort of collect and bring back, and I don't know. But the point is, it's certainly not the only alien facility on the solar system. It's a little bit out of the way, but it's a really interesting one. The reason I picked it for this project was because of the photo. We had photographic. You see, this is something that a lot of people don't get. We most likely would never do a remote viewing project on the Roswell crash. And you can say, why not? So many people have heard about it. That's the trouble. It's all hearsay. We don't have any unambiguous information about the Roswell crash from an official source. For example, we don't have any pictures.
Well, the government has done nothing but try to cover it up and not give us that. So
I agree with you.
People are so jaded, and they don't trust what comes out of many so-called official sources. So it's obvious. I mean, I don't blame them for being skeptical. I mean, you've been lied so many times too. Like in the Kennedy assassination, it's just lie after lie after lie after lie. So after a while, you just kind of get jaded after a while. So
I know, but with remote viewing, you have to be able to take the remote viewing data and compare it to something that is absolutely not in dispute.
Okay.
And so you have to have photos or something.
Right.
Now, this does not downplay the value of somebody who did a Roswell type of investigation.
Sure.
It's just that at the Institute, we have to always have two types of data. One are called verifiable, and the other are called new data. So with the verifiable, you have to have something rock solid. Now, in this case, it involved a picture that was officially released by the United States government, by the Cassini spacecraft, released by NASA. So we had unambiguous stuff. Also, we know exactly what should be there based on what we know for fact about it. It's got to be a barren, icy moon with no atmosphere, with a meteor crater, and the remote viewers got everything.
Right.
They got the fact that it was off-world. They got the fact that it was a meteor crater.
Right.
They got the fact that it was a facility on the wall of the meteor crater. I mean, the level of detail is amazing. That's all verifiable.
Right.
And because they can do that verifiable stuff, you can then say, okay, well, what else did they find out?
Sure.
So that's why we could not do the Roswell, even if it's totally true that the crash did happen, because we don't have that verifiable chunk to compare.
Let me, if I may, Courtney, I'd like to make a couple of comments and also tie it into the planet that possibly exploded, leading to this asteroid belt just between just outside of Mars. Here's some interesting questions, and I'm asking these because I've been in touch with some spirits on the other side, and they wanted me to mention this today and kind of bring everything in context. You mentioned that the evidence points to a possible war on this planet that did exist, where this asteroid belt is just outside of Mars. And I've had several guests on my show, wonderful lady named Ariana, who's been in touch with her star friends in the Galactic Alliance, who came in with some very profound messages a few weeks ago. Another gentleman named Garnet Schulthauser, one of Canada's best psychics, who was approached by his guardian angel in 2007, and he answered all of his questions regarding his life's purpose and why we're here, kind of very profound sorts of things. But they kept saying over and over again that we're sort of on we have a choice now. Humanity has a choice, either to go down a positive spiritual path so that we don't end up destroying ourselves like we've done many times before, or to continue on with war and negativity and end up destroying the planet. Now, personally, I know that many, many people around the world are choosing a positive spiritual path and a positive way for their future, and I'm confident that humanity as a whole will make those good choices so we don't end up destroying ourselves. But what's interesting is that these guests have said on the program is that over and over in our past history, we've ended up, humans in other planets have destroyed themselves as well, like this asteroid belt now that's just outside of Mars. And Mars itself, when that planet blew up, apparently it blew the atmosphere off Mars, so that if there were any humans there, they lost. I mean, they lost out as well. I personally think that many of the humans, just when Mars was affected by that exploding planet, ended up coming to Earth here to start all over again, and here we are again. I had a lady on my program last year, a wonderful lady named Shirley Williams, who'd written a book called Atlantis, and she said that that we, in her opinion, that history was repeating itself again, in the sense that we've come to a certain point of technological and spiritual evolution, and we need to take a positive path, or we could end up blowing ourselves apart again, like we've done in the past. But I just wanted to make that comment because it's interesting to put things in kind of perspective. We've been through this this road before.
Ted, I think that's a very reasonable approach, even in the absence of sort of a verifiable trail, mm-hmm. of documented hard evidence that that happens. I think that's a very likely scenario that you just produced. For example, mm-hmm. remote viewing, if anything, demonstrates that we're not limited by our physical bodies. So obviously, when the physical body goes, we're mm-hmm. still there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, remote viewing couldn't be done in the first place. So the question is, when the war happened, mm-hmm. and the remote viewing data are very clear on that, that there was a war of some type, that the question is, well, what are you going to do? Now, some people could have come to Earth on ships.
Sure.
But there certainly would not have been enough ships to bring everybody here. And the exploding planet seemed to indicate that things happened very quickly.
Sure.
So some people might have been able to get here on ships, but the large majority of the people would have had to have died. And then the real question is, where do you go next? And just think of yourself. Where are you going to go? Are you going to skip galaxies, solar systems, whatever? You're going to go to you're going to go to some place that's close.
Right.
And so right there you have Mars having serious problems. You have Maldek blown up.
Right.
Where are you going to go? Well, Earth is a habitable planet in the warm zone.
Sure.
Right there.
Right.
And so it's a natural way to think that we are the Martians, that we are the people
sure.
that were on Maldek, that we right. that they were us when we were there. Now, there is one thing that's interesting, Ted, you might be interested in this, mm-hmm. is that we have done remote viewing for a very long time. The military has done applications. We have done many projects. We're the leading venue for this, civilian venue for this type of thing anywhere. And we don't have any evidence at all, not even slight, that suggests that humans can tell when you're remote viewing them.
Hmm.
So when you remote view a human, they never know it, and they never turn around and look at you. Advanced extraterrestrials often do.
Right.
They actually, we have cases, and we have something coming up in the new Phoenix Lights project where that exactly mm-hmm. thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
They actually know that you're there, they turn in your direction, and they sometimes start up a conversation. But with humans, it never happens. So, Ted, if you hear somebody, and I'm just giving my opinion, if you hear somebody tell you, oh no, I know the remote viewers, and I can tell because I'm being looked at and stuff like that, you know, those people are in need of therapy or something like that, because they're just in their own realm. They're not really seeing stuff, for a couple reasons. First of all, remote viewing takes a lot of effort to do in a project, and it's only done in major projects like this type we do here. Nobody ever would ever use something like that to spy on their neighbors. It's like you don't build the World Trade Center because you need a lean-to in your backyard. I mean, it's just like it's not even slightly conceivable. However, mm-hmm. however, I want to say that when they did the remote viewing for Mars and for Iapetus, those people were just like us. There was not a single situation where anybody on Mars noticed them, that the remote viewing was taking place, or anybody on Iapetus. They looked like us, they sounded like us, they talked like us, a different language, but And they didn't know that we were remote viewing them.
Well, I have to tell you this. Sorry to interrupt, Courtney, but I was at a UFO conference, a wonderful conference last November in Bergen, Norway, or October, actually. And while I was there, I met an interesting lady named Ola Gumnick, she says she's from Venus, actually, from a human civilization there that exists in the fourth and fifth dimensions. They are a human civilization, she said, but a very old one that spiritually evolved to leave the third dimension behind, which is where we are, into the fourth and fifth dimensions. And she was brought here by her star family to enlighten and try to help humanity here on this planet evolve. And one of the things, interesting things she said, it stuck in my mind, she said, each of the different peoples on this planet, let's say, for example, the people from China, actually came from Mars. That's what she said. And the Native Americans came from somewhere else. Africans actually came, actually had blue skin, and they came from the Andromeda Galaxy many millennia ago. And over time, the intensity of our sun turned their skin much, much, much darker. So that everyone on this planet actually came from somewhere else. And when she said that that the people in China had actually come from Mars, that was very interesting for me to listen to, because especially when you're talking about Mars now and how that there was once a human civilization there and also on this other planet that blew itself up. And Earth was the most logical place for those people to go to because there was nowhere else that was close.
And you know, sure, Ted, you don't have to have any type of strained logic to come up with that.
Sure.
It just makes sense. I mean,
sure.
Like, where are you going to go?
Sure.
You're going to go someplace right near. Now, Earth was not an optimal first choice place to be because it's not a good planet for a... This is actually a terrible planet for a long-term civilization because it's 8,000 miles in diameter and almost all of it is liquid molten rock.
Wow.
It's got a very thin 8-mile thick crust on the surface of it. We're living on the top of a balloon.
Well,
and this is fine for 20,000 years, but beyond that, at some point in time, the sun is going to burp in our direction, and it will cause the jelly inside the Earth to quiver, and that just will crack the shell. I mean, it'll cause all types of disruptive stuff. For a long-term civilization, you need a...
stability.
You need a long time, like a million years of peace and quiet.
Well,
and so Mars and Maldek would have been better choices.
Sure.
So this is sort of a place of last resort, not the first choice.
Well, I think we've been down this road before, and I think for humanity on planet Earth is to learn from our lessons. Unfortunately, so much of what's our history is hidden, or we just don't know our history, you know, Courtney?
Well, that's one of the reasons that we're doing these projects at the Farsight Institute,
absolutely,
to fill in the gaps. Now, we're not filling in all the gaps, but we're having major... We're putting in major projects that fill in huge elements that force people then to connect the dots.
Sure.
And this is becoming very mainstream, and we're very respected at this point. I mean, nobody in mainstream is laughing at us anymore.
Well,
that's a good sign. We're starting to change the environment slowly but surely.
Yeah, I just we've got just a couple minutes left, and please hold on, Courtney. I just want to make I want to thank you so much for coming on today, and I want to urge people to please stay tuned for our next hour. We'll be interviewing a wonderful gentleman who's the world's one of the best people to operate these Hato vibrational machines in Japan. He's had great success in curing all kinds of diseases with them. This is a pre-record I did several days ago with him in Tokyo. Michiko Hayashi, the wonderful global director of the Moto Peace Project, will be translating his fascinating interview, and that'll be played for the next hour. And also, too, I wanted to mention, too, that we're having a wonderful spiritual film event tonight to support the children at Fukushima. If you can go, I would really love to see you all there. The address is 1600 Northeast 8th Street here in Bellevue, Washington. And, Courtney, we've got about a little more than a minute left, and I want to give you the floor to wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Sure. Well, actually, the take-home message I'd like everybody to get is the place to start is our website, which is farsight.org, and take a look at some of our projects that we have so that you can actually see what we do. But the first thing you should do is just go to the bottom of our homepage and watch the most recent Farsight Scene video news blast, which is our video newsletter. And it gives you a really good, very quick overview of stuff we're doing. And then before you leave, a couple things. If you could sign up for our free newsletter, that's an email newsletter. We never give out the email addresses out for any reason whatsoever, period, full stop. So there's no spam, and we only send out a weekly newsletter to tell people what we are doing. We are a nonprofit, so we don't advertise. So the email newsletter and the video news blast are the only ways we have people to do things. And secondly, if you could subscribe to our two YouTube channels, we have a science YouTube channel, and we have what we call our cool and sexy, our fun YouTube channel.
We've run out of time, my friend.
That's it.
Thank you so much for coming on today, Courtney. Have a wonderful weekend. Please stay tuned for our next hour, friends.